Right, the topic is an Agadata in Bava Basra Yud Aleph Amud Aleph about Binyamin HaTzadik. I must emphasize that in the yeshivas they normally learn the Gemara and the halachic portions in great detail and tend to run over quickly through the Agadata. But at the time of the Shas, there were people who were experts in Agada just like halacha, and it's a slightly different type of approach, but it got to be treated with great care and understanding. Now we're going to try to do that here, and we'll see that we're going to learn some very important lessons from it. I think what we'll do first is to go quickly through the Braisa so everyone can know the story, the main line, and then we'll go over it again, pointing out certain difficulties which need explanation. So the Gemara starts at the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Tanya, we've learnt in the Braisa, Omru Olov al Binyamin HaTzadik. They said about a particular tzaddik of a gentleman whose name was Binyamin, Shoyim Muna al Kupo Shel Tzedakah. He was a Gabite Tzedakah. He's in charge of the Tzedakah. Kupo means the box, but here it means the distribution of Tzedakah to poor people. Pamachas, Bos Ishulafonov, it once happened that a lady came before him, Bishnei Batzeris, in the time of great drought, where there was great need. Omrelo, she said, a Rebbe, my master, Parnaseini, would you please give me food to eat? Omalo, he said to her, Hoavodo, Shem Bekupa Shetstaka Klum, I swear that there's nothing left in the stocker box, I can't give you anything. Omrelo, so she replied to him, a Rebbe, my Rebbe, im ein atom afarnesein, if you don't give me something to eat, hari isho v'shivo v'neho mesim, there'll be a woman and seven kids will all die from famine and hunger. Omad ufirnesa, he therefore changed his mind and he decided to give her some food, mishalo, from his own private assets. Liyomim, subsequently, cholo, this great tzaddik Binyamin, he became sick, but not a lamus, and he was approaching death. He was in a serious crisis, possibly even in a coma. Omru Malach HaShores lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Malach HaShores turned to Hashem Yisbarach, and they said to him, Ribbono Shel Olam, Ato Omarto, Kol HaMakayim Nefesh Achas Misrael Kilukim Olam Molei. You've already made a ma'amar which says that anybody who keeps alive one human being of Klal Yisrael, it's as if he kept the whole world going. Ubinyamin HaTzadik, Shehechya Ishu V'Shiva Baneo Yomus, B'Shonim Mu'atas Ha'alalu. And Binyamin HaTzadik, who was kept alive, a woman and her seven children, are you going to let him die in such a short, with such a short lifespan that he's had? It doesn't tell us how old he was, but he's obviously a young man still, had plenty of time to live. Miyad Korlo Gzardino. As soon as HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard the kainas of the Malachim, he decided, or they decided, to destroy the Gzardin. They tore up the punishment or the decree of death. Tana and the Braisa goes on to tell us, Hosiflo Eshim Ushtaim Shono Arshnosov. He was given an extra 22 years of life on top of his from his present time. He lived for a further 22 years. Now that's the Braisa, a beautiful, simple Agada, which gives you a simple message that the man was a tzaddik, he kept a person alive. We've already learned previously tzedakah, tatzil, mimoves, that tzedakah is a method of saving people's lives, but there seems to be something special in this Gemara, something a little bit more than that, as we're going to see. Now, although we said tzedakah, tatzil, mimoves, it can save a person from death. It doesn't necessarily give him a full 22 years of life. It isn't always successful. And the Gemara also says in one place it saves one from what's called a misa mishuna. You won't get an irregular or exceptional type of death. You'll die in a natural manner. In fact, one of the Mephoshim says that if you take tzedakah, tatzil, mimoves, if you take the first letters of the word tzedakah, tatzil, mimoves, you get again, moves the second time, but in the wrong order. The Udstock has evolved, Tatsu as a tof, Moves is a mem that gives you, again, another form of Moves, as if to tell us there is the straightforward form of Moves, which is Stokotas and Moves, but there's also a Mashunadika type of Moves, which is Stokotas and Moves, which was out of the ordinary, and that also will be prevented by the form of Moves. By Stoker, I beg your pardon, by Stoker. Now, as I said before, we need now to go through this Brisa and see what needs to be dealt with in a little bit more detail. So we'll go over it again. Tanya, Omru Olov al Binyomin Hatzadik. You see that this Brisa doesn't say he's any old Gabbard Stoker. This could have happened to anybody. This was a particularly tzaddik of a man. Now, clearly he got the name tzaddik because Binyamin himself, the original Binyamin, the son of Yaakov, is known as Binyamin HaTzadik, so it's a very apposite sort of name, like Yosef HaTzadik or Avraham Avinu or something. But here, you wouldn't have said that about him unless he was a specially gifted sort of person, a person. So we've got to look into what he did and why he did it, because we're not talking about an ordinary Gabba, we're talking about a tzaddik of a Gabba. Shoya Mamuna al Kupo Shodstoko. He was appointed over the kupo. Now, as we were translating, we said kupo is a box. It's more than a box. Kupo really here, the connotation means the administration of the stock of funds. That would probably mean you'd have to go out and collect, and I'm sure the people sitting around this table know what a job that is, to go and try and collect funds for the Moser. It's not an easy task. You've got to put all sorts of hours into it. You've got to take all sorts of busyness. It's not easy at all. And then you've got to distribute that stocker. Here you have to distribute to all sorts of different people, some making false claims. How do you determine which one to give, which one not to give? There are all sorts of halachas in Shulchan Aruch. What priority do you give to a particular form of stocker? That obviously a person who's starving, hungry, got no food, will have to have some sort of priority. But there's all sorts of other questions. Once question came about was if one person was desperate for fertility treatment and somebody else was very, very poor, which person got the priority? And I'd heard once in the name of was either Rav Chaim Kanievsky or his father, the Stipler, that from a Gemara in the Dorim, which says that Avoin, not Bavon, it says Arbo Chashuvim Kemes, I beg your pardon, Arbo Chashuvim Kemes, there are four people, and then it starts off by saying Oni, Suma, Metzaira, and Mishein Lo Bonim. The fact that the Oni is mentioned first, and Mishein Lo Bonim is mentioned last, that is shows a priority for the Oni. Now, we're not going to go into it now, but there was a question raised against that from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the whole Vikuach was published subsequently in one of the issues of Mevakshei Torah as to showing that one can deduce something from the priority mentioned in an Agadic Memra, even though the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems on the surface to say you can't learn priorities from lists, but one can do so in the appropriate circumstances. And that was learned from there, that an Oni actually has priority over Mishein Lo Bonim. So there are lots of priorities out. Therefore, the man who's looking and looking after and administering the Stoker Kupa has to be a tzaddik and a person who knows his halakhos to know how much to give to each person. So we're talking of a Binyamin Tzaddik who's in charge of the administration of the Tzedakah funds of that particular place, and he knew exactly how he had to do with it. Parmachas, one occasion, Bosa Isho Lefonov Bishnei Batzoros. A woman came before him at the time of drought. Now, the fact that it tells us the time of drought gives us a message. It was a particularly difficult time. That means the pressures on the Kupas Tzedakah were enormous. It wasn't just a normal day-to-day routine. This was talking about a drought where people were starving and possibly dying of hunger and thirst. And it was a very, very tricky situation to know who one could one had to give to and the circumstances. And this was a lady who came again, that may be relevant, whether who has the priority, whether a lady or a man come to you. That's another interesting question, as to for certain things a man has priority and certain things a lady has priority in stocker matters. But that's what happened here. The lady came forward, and on the low, and she said to her, Rebbe, you see, she treated him with great dignity. We're not talking about a Mr. So-and-so. Maybe I mistranslated it before. Rebbe means he was a Rebbe, her Rav, a person who knew what to do. And she doesn't say, ha-chileni. She doesn't say, give me food to eat, or give me stocker. She says, parnaseni. Will you give me parnasa? Now, I'm not going to go into that at the moment, because you'll see later on, we're going to have a very, very interesting derivation from the use of that word. The word parnaseni is not quite the same in the Gemara as it is today. Today we talk about parnosa, or a parnas of a tzibur, somebody who's looking after the tzibur. Parnaseni has a wider connotation, means give me sustenance, enable me to live from things. It's not just feed me, it's a bit more than that. Well, we'll see that in a second. Omar lo, he replied to her, hoavoda. Now, hoavoda is a form of shavua. It's well known in Shas that very often when a Tana wanted to emphasize what he was saying, he would take something from the Beis HaMikdash as a sort of peg to hang on, but it actually has the power of a shavua. Now, we know that you do not make shavuas lightly. In fact, nowadays we very rarely make a shavua. And here, for some reason or other, he felt it was necessary to emphasize what he was doing. I make a shavua. I'm not just making this up, he said. I swear, she'en b'kupah she'tzachakum, there is nothing left in the kupah. It's all gone. I'm not just telling you bobber meisen. I'm not just trying to get rid of you. I'm not trying to say, look, there's nothing for you. I'm telling you that there is absolutely empty. That the situation is so bad that there's nothing left in the kupah she'tzachakum. Omra lo, she said to him, Rebbe, im ein atom afarnaseni, if you do not help me, do not give me parnasa, hare isho v'shiva bonal mesin, a woman and her seven children will die. Now that's interesting. We haven't heard about these seven children previously. Before that, she just asked for parnasa for herself. She didn't mention she had kids. Now can you imagine if you went up to a cook to the Gabbard Stocker and said, can you give me some food to eat? Surely, it'd be far more effective to say, would you help to feed my poor starving kids? I've got seven kids at home. Aren't you going to do something about them? She doesn't mention the kids in the first place. She says, give me parnasa. And then all of a sudden when he says, no, I can't, she turns around and says, well, if you don't help me, I and my seven children will also die. Well, that seems a very unusual way of going collecting for tzedakah. Normal people who go collect for tzedakah know how to tell you a pretty good sob story. You know, he's an almana, and he's a yosem, and he's a this, and you know the famous story about the fellow who went collecting for a widow. He was collecting for an almana, and the fellow eventually asked him various questions, and he found out that he was actually collecting for his own wife. So he said, but you said you were collecting for an almana. So why did you say? He said, well, it's far more effective to say I'm collecting for an almana. And the Yiddish say, es hartig as ich leb? Does it hurt you that I'm still alive? What difference does it make? What difference does it make? I'm trying to collect for my tzedakah. I'm going to tell the best possible story that I can. And it's far more effective if I'm collecting for an almana than I'm collecting for my own family. So it seems that this woman didn't want to do that. She was obviously a tzedekes, who actually did not want to pull the heartstrings. She just wanted what was her due. That seems clear. We're going to see a bit more about this when we go into a bit more depth in a second. So, which is, if you don't help me, there will be eight dead people, myself and seven children. Omar Dupinasam Shalom. He suddenly decided he'd help her from himself. Now, I ask you, why on earth did he not think of that before? You've got here a poor woman. There's a mitzvah stocker in the Torah. Right, is a gabbard stocker and there's no money in the stocker, but can't you put your hand in your own pocket? They do say nowadays that once the Gabbistocker starts putting his hand in his own pocket, there'll be no end to it, and he'll end up completely bankrupt. Therefore, you shouldn't do such things. But we're not talking about an ordinary Gabba, we're talking about a tzaddik. And the whole raya that he actually did do it in the end. If there was a rule that he shouldn't do it, well, what's changed? Why has it changed from where we started off? He started off by saying, I'm not going to, and all of a sudden he finds extra funds in his pocket. What's it all about? Well, the simple explanation to that was that he thought at the beginning he had a woman coming along collecting with not a terribly serious situation. She was a bit hungry, she needed a bit of extra help, but it wasn't something so terrifically serious that he had to dig into his own pocket. As far as he was concerned, from the rules of the Kupa, she was excluded. But it wasn't something that he had to put his hand in his own pocket, because he was probably a poor man himself. Had he been rich, I'm pretty sure he would have helped her out. Because a rich man has to do these things. But this, he was probably having a difficult time with it himself. And he didn't have much spare. But when he heard that there were 8 people who were going to die as a result, then he realized this was not just ordinary stocker. This was something much more than ordinary stocker. We'll see, according to one of the explanations, what it would be, but according to the simple pshat in the Gemara, it is probably, one could say, what is bikuach nefesh. In the other cases, he knew that the people came with all sorts of sob stories, they wanted a bit extra. Everybody knows that when people collect, they gild the lily a little bit, they tell Baba Maisim, they add and embellish the story. And he possibly thought that that's what was going on here, but when he heard that Lachachilu, when she came, she only asked for herself. And now she's saying, look, take it from me, the matzav is pikuach nefesh, that we are going to die. Then he realized that the situation is very, very different, and he had to go beyond the kupa stocker, and he took money out of his own pocket. That would be the simple explanation of the Gemara. And he gave a parnasa from himself. Off she went, and the story, first half of the story concludes. Liyomim, shortly afterwards, cholo, he became seriously ill. Venota lamus. He was actually on his deathbed. We're not told what he was suffering from. It could be some very serious illness. He may have been in a coma. We don't know what it was, whether it was some virulent form of incipient cancer in those days. I think that's a much later machlo, but something which really, it looks not a lamus. The Gemara is telling us that there was no chance. There's always a chance, but it was not expected that he would survive. So Omru Malachi Ashores Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Malachi Ashores turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They turned to the Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara uses various terms for Hashem, and it's interesting, it starts off by saying they turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the general name for the Ribbono Shelolam, but they then said, they didn't call him HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they said Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a slight change, because it starts out by talking about that Kodesh Baruch Hu's overall Kedusha, the Shechina, etc. But when they approach him, they say, look, you are the master of the world. That means you regulate how the rules of the world progress. So they change their Loshon to Ribbono Shel Olam. You're not behaving like a proper judge here. Ribbono Shel Olam, you should operate the world in the correct fashion. Atzo or Marzo, you yourself have said, if a person keeps one person alive, it's as if you kept the whole world alive. Should he die at such a young age? If they said, that's not fair. You're not running the world according to your rules. It shouldn't be like that. Immediately, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted their taina, and he got better. Now, the Miyad tells us that also an interesting story. It could have said Korolo Gzardin, and what's the Miyad immediately? The reason for the Miyad is this. It had to be demonstrated that the reason for Binyamin HaTzadik's recovery was something supernatural because of this tefillah and prayer of the Malachim. Because if it had been a gradual recovery as would normally be expected, the person gets stronger gradually, to find some antidote, some counter drug, which gradually makes the person become stronger and better. That would take a long period to have a period of recuperation. It takes time. But if the person just jumps up out of the coma and whatever he had, it just disappears just like that, then we know that's miraculous. And therefore, it's telling us miyad. This is clearly referable only to this prayer that the Malachim gave because Binyamin HaTzadik deserved to be saved. That's what that means to tell us. But at the moment we're only told the Korulo Gzardin, that the decree of death has been temporarily removed. Tona. But then the Gemara said, we're going to bring a brisa to prove that it was a really long extension of his lifetime. Usifilo Esim Ushtayim Shana Ashnosov. They added 22 years to his life. Now, the major thing, first thing hits you, Vos Epos, as they say in age 22. It's axiomatic that any number which is mentioned in Shas always has a deeper significance. In Chumash and Tanakh it's also the same. A number, apart from, we're not talking about gematrias, I'm talking about it at all. Every number represents a certain feature. We've discussed that, I think, on this topic here. We've discussed the number 5 on one occasion, which is the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael in the center of things, if you remember, insulated but not isolated. The number 3 represents Chizuk. The number 6 represents the limit of Teva. The number 7 represents Kedusha Shabbat Teva. And we've been through other examples where the number tells us a particular message. For example, in Shas we have 3 numbers which tell us very, very large amounts. One is 13, one is 60, and one is 300. Why we have to have 3 different numbers for that is a topic on its own, but each of those represents a huge number. 400 represents a clash of culture. So every number which is mentioned, especially in Agoda, it's true elsewhere too, but in Agoda in particular, there's a particular message coming through from that number. And what we have to do here is find what is this particular message of this number 22. Now all that needs explanation, and before we go further, let me tell you that I found 5 different explanations of the 22 years, each one brilliant in its own form, and each one which has got a lot of interesting side messages from it. Let's start off first with the Marshal. The Marshal suggests that the reason why the number 22 was chosen was because it said before, is it right that this man should die b'shonim mu'otos, in with such a short time? And we find a parallel in the Chumash in the case of Rivka, who sent Yaakov away for Yomim Achodim. A Yomim Achodim is more or less the same as Yomim Shonim Muatos, because he sent her for a short period, and that short period was 22 years. As we know, Yaakov was separated from his parents for 22 years, Yosef was separated from Yaakov for this period of 22 years. So we see 22 years as sort of a minimum span which is appropriate to give to extra life to Binyamin HaTzadik. As I mentioned, the numbers have a particular significance, and to some extent just begging the question, if already they had 22 years, why was that? What was the significance of that? Well, we find that the number of 22 occurs in a number of places, and we'll come back to that in connection with another explanation shortly. But it does seem that they had to have some period of time, and the period which was chosen was this Yomim Muatas, which is what the Malachim had quoted in the first place, and therefore it seemed appropriate to give him a 22 year lifespan, as mentioned in the case of Rivka and Yaakov. That's the Marshal's explanation. If we move on to the next of the 5 explanations, the second explanation is that of the Vilna Gaon in the Kol Eliyahu. As usual, he has brilliant mathematical calculations which come to wonderful conclusions. He explains this Gemara, there's got to be a reason why it comes to the number 22 based on his entitlement. And he suggests the following clever mathematical calculation. He says as follows. We know that Binyamin HaTzadik gave sustenance to a poor person, and that would benefit him with seven brachas, which the Gemara has mentioned earlier, that a person who gives an oni paranasa, gives an oni stocker, will get seven brachas. However, there is a bigger bracha to be obtained by not only giving the oni money, but being mefaisa, a mefaisa biyudalef. If you are mefaisa the oni, that means not only do you give it, but you give it with a smile, and you make him feel good, and you really help him out of his depression, then not only do you get only seven brachas, you get 11 brachas. Now there's an argument between the Meforshim, Tosus mentions in one place, as to whether it's 7 plus 11, therefore you get 18 brachas altogether. The Gaon obviously takes the Shitta, it's not 11 plus 7, it's 11 including 7. So if you give an Oni, you'll get 7 brachas, but if you Mephiasim, you will get a total of 11 brachas. Now, here we have not just one person whose life was saved, we have 8 people. That's the woman and her 7 children. So therefore he's entitled to 11 brachas for each of the 8 people that he assisted and brought them back to life and happiness and so forth. So 11 times 8 is he's entitled to 88 brachas. But now, the question is, how long does a bracha last? So, but if you go around Shas, you'll find in Maseches Sota there is a discussion as to how long the bracha that a Sota has can keep her alive, even though she's supposed to explode with the Mei Sota, the Mayim HaMa'orim. If, however, she's been a Tzadekes during her lifetime, apart from this terrible Averi which she did, she won't blow up on the spot. She will have a period of delay during which she can do her make her last teshuva with her maker, etc. And the Gemara has various opinions, but the Maskana seems to be that this will last for a period of 3 months. So if she is entitled to a bracha, she can have that bracha extend her life by 3 months. So says the Gaon, we have 88 brachas for this person. If we take 88 brachas times 3 months, 3 months is 1/4 of a year. Divide 88 by 4, and you get exactly 22 years. So therefore, this Binyamin HaTzadik was entitled, as of right, to have a period of 22 years based on the fact that he was Mephias. He was Mephias 8 people, and that gives him 11 brachas for each one, that's 88, and each bracha lasts for 3 months, QED, 22 years. That's the typical genius of the Gro as to how we come to the computation of 22 years, properly calculated, and that settles his entitlement. The third shitta, the third explanation of this 22 years, was one which I must confess I thought of myself, and I was delighted afterwards to the later stage to find it in the Eitz Yosef on the Ein Yaakov. He suggests that the 22 immediately connotes to anyone the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. And everybody knows that the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis have special powers. We discussed this, I think, in connection with Tisha B'Av on the last time that we spoke, how the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis club together to cause Klal Yisrael to be brought back to do teshuva when we misbehave, and that's why it's written the form of Aleph Beis. But when we behave ourselves, then the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis come and protect us and look after us. We find that in connection with the Ashrei, which we say with Pesach Yisodecho and Ashrei Slomiderech, but it's actually also very poignant in the fact that the two Psukim in Chumash, which have all 22 letters of the Aleph Beis, give us this message. The one is in B'Shalach chapter Tesayin, Pasuk Tezayin, which is talking about the Mon, and the Mon, of course, was the sustenance of the whole of Klal Yisrael, so all the Aleph Beis were involved in that. And the other one is in the Pasuk and Voschanan Ohadisa, which is in the Haggadah, which talks about how Kadosh Baruch Hu took a Goy Mitoch Goy, how he delivered us and gave us Geula. So all the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis want to be involved in such a situation. So it's axiomatic that the number 22, therefore, is a number which gives Koyach to Klal Yisrael. And there are two Gemaras which talk about the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, that Hari Shohoyu, 21,999 Jews, and then one person becomes a Geir, that's one Gemara, and the other Gemara is where 21,999 Jewish people, and then somebody gives birth to another, that's the Gemara in Yevamos. then in each case you'll get 22,000 yidden and you're brought back to the Kedusha. Where do we see that? Because the Pasuk says in Ba'alozcha, Shuvah Hashem Rivavos Alfei Yisrael. Rivavos is 2 times 10,000, Alfei is 2,000. So we see that a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Kedusha, the Shechina, rests on 22,000 yidden. Of course, there's a significance in 600,000, there's a significance in a minion of 10, but there's some special Kedusha and power, a sort of Kedusha, which a Shekhinah, which floats upon Klal Yisrael when we've got 22,000. So we see that this number 22 has this supernatural power of life and Kedusha, and since this Binyamin HaTzadik deserved it, therefore, so to speak, the whole 22 letters of Aleph Beis came to be mitzarif to give him a year. So that's the third explanation of why we get to this number 22. There's a fourth explanation. This is from the Iyud Yaakov on the Ein Yaakov. He suggests that, look, we know that Binyamin HaTzadik can't have been an old man, because it says in the Gemara he had shanim muwatas, he was a young man. On the other hand, we have another principle. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that nobody who's a tzaddik will die at less than half his years. Remember the famous business with Bilam? He must have been 33, because it says lo yechtzu, what the pasuk says. Parabashal nafshi. But anyhow, quite clearly, a tzaddik must live half his years out in normal circumstances. Now, the normal life of a person is 70 years, as it says in Tehillim, Shivim Shana. So therefore half that is 35. So we can take it for granted that this gentleman was at least 35 years old when this took place. But as he was a very young chap, as the Gemara indicates, he must have been 35. That's where we start from. So now, he had to be given a certain period of time of extra life. Well, what are we going to give him? He's only 35 at the moment. We're going to have to give him something which represents what he did. That's the normal thing, Midah Keneged Midah. So, the Inaka suggests, if we add on 22 years of his life, that makes him 57, which is Zon. A Zon and a Furnace. That's, Zon is 57. It's true, it's a gematria, but in Agoda very often you do that. There's a very famous Arizal who says that the reason why we have in the first bracha we have 57 words because of Zon, the same thing. So we do see we have to not 57 words. Sorry, in Mizmor, I beg your pardon, in Mizmor of the David Hashem Roi Lech, so the 57 words, and those 57 words tie it up with Zon, which is a reason why there is a minhag to say that particular Mizmor in every tefillin, before benching on any occasion. Many people have such a minhag. We have that minhag of Chal HaShudas, that we definitely say that particular mizmor, but that's connected with the number 57. I've mixed up, not the bracha, it's the mizmor Ladovid, has 57 words. So we see that Zon is his entitlement because of what he did. But he also goes on to say, there's another factor in 22. If you divide 22 years up into months, how many months would you get in 22 years? Well, clearly you're going to get 22 times 12, which is 264, I believe. Yes? But you're not finished, because in 22 years you're going to have 8 leap years. Now, you have 7 leap years in 19 years, therefore in the 22 years you're going to have 8 leap years. That's the normal thing. So you're going to have 8 Ibur Chodesh. So that means you're going to have 264 plus 8, which is 272. Right? You've got 264 months. No, hang on. 220 plus 44 is 264. Plus 8 is 8, which 8 is 272. 272 is Gematria Ro'ov. Therefore, since he counted the Ro'ov, he was the Farnes and Zon Bimei Ro'ov, therefore for those reasons he's entitled to have that. Now you might say that's a little bit fanciful and far-fetched, but the fact of the matter is you can sometimes use Gematria's Paparos together with the other explanations. It fits in very beautifully. So that's four explanations so far, but the one explanation which is halachically extremely relevant you'll see why in a second, is the explanation of the Chofetz Chaim, which is attached in Avas Chesed as a sort of footnote in Avas Chesed. The Chofetz Chaim says this cannot have been ordinary tzedakah, because ordinary stock is stock that's in your modest. What is the special reason that that the Malachim made such a fuss about this particular man? We know stock attached to the Nimolus. Why are they making such an issue of it? Secondly, he hones in on this word paranoseni. He says paranoseni doesn't just mean give stock, it means much more than that. It means give me paranoso. And thirdly, he asks the kasha we asked before, why did the woman keep quiet about her seven children and only raise it later? Says the Chofetz Chaim in a brilliant explanation like this. He says, we are not talking about ordinary tzedakah here. It's a different situation entirely. The situation, if it had been ordinary tzedakah, may have been that this gentleman, Binyamin HaTzadik, had already given so much he couldn't give any more. So what made him change his mind to give more? The answer is that when she first applied to him, she didn't apply for tzedakah, then she would have mentioned her seven children. She applied to him for paranoso, please help me. What's that mean? Give me the wherewithal so I can continue doing my own business. My business has gone bust, I've got nothing left with which to do business, and I need a bit of capital to continue my business. That's what paranoseni. Give me the wherewithal to make my own paranoso. And that refers to her, that's referred to her children. Her children are not relevant to that. But Binyamin HaTzadik says, I'm sorry, there's nothing in the kupa, I can't do that. And just to give you a parnasa on your own, I can't see that this is any particularly important thing. Then she replies to him, look, if you don't give me parnasa, don't give me that, I will not have anything with which to make a living. And then not only will I die, I'll have seven children who are dependent upon that parnasa. They're dependent upon that business. They will also not be able to survive. When he heard that, he said, oh, this is not just an ordinary mitzvah of stock in the normal sense. This is something more than that. This is giving parnasa to somebody. Now, if you look at the Rambam, Matnas Aniyim, he tells you there are 8 degrees and levels of stocker, starting from the lowest level, which is where you give it with a drum and a grumble, and you make the person feel embarrassed. And gradually goes up stage by stage, that the higher level of stock is where what you give it with a smile. Another level in the stock is where you give it to and the person doesn't know from whom he's receiving. And another level of stock is where the person who's receiving knows from whom it's coming, but you don't know who's getting it. And so on. Until the second highest level of stock is where you put it into the stocker box, you don't know who's receiving it, and the person who receives it doesn't know from whom it's come. That's a very high form of stocker, because you're giving it without any request for reward, and you have to, you're not going to get a big name as being a big bald stocker, because nobody's going to talk about it, nobody knows you've even given it, and the person who received it is not going to be embarrassed at it. That's the second highest level of stocker. But says the Rambam, there's this highest of all levels of stocker is the stocker of the hechezaktobo. That means where you do the stocker in such a way that it's not even stocker. The person who gets it doesn't even know he's getting stocker. He thinks he's getting a loan. He thinks he's getting a birthday present. He thinks you are buying his wares because this person wants them. A person sets up a hairdressing business and you go and have your haircut. You don't need to have your haircut. You could have gone somewhere else. But you davka go to that person in order to give him the parnosa, to help him along. Then that person is really grateful, and he's not in any way embarrassed by receipt of the assistance. I know I've got a situation where we have a barber who, it's possible, normally his charge would be, let's say, £5-6, so you give him a big tip, you give him £15, and say, what a good job you've done. Now, that extra £6 or £7 is exactly the exact above, because he thinks he's getting it because he did such a good job. But what is actually happening is you are helping him to build his business, and he doesn't even think he's getting stocker from it. That's the highest form of stocker. There's another form, for example, where a person's got a parnasa, a job in a school, and they're a bit underpaid. So somebody comes along and gives the school extra bits and says, look, give that person a higher wage. I'll look after that extra bit. That's very exactable, because the person thinks he deserves the wage, and he thinks that he's entitled to it. And he's getting the money, and he doesn't realize that somebody is helping him out. That's such a high form of stocker. It's the highest level that you can get in stocker. And the main point is that the recipient is in no way mavuyash. He does not feel in any way that his dignity is being lowered. That's the highest form of stucco. So this lady had come to this man and he said to him, please give me something whereby I can make a parnosa and I won't have to rely upon stucco, and then I can look after the whole family. When Binyamin HaTzadik realized that this woman was not just a chapa, was not just somebody who was trying to get stucco for a session, really was going to put herself out and help a whole family, he felt this is something extra special, and therefore he's prepared to dig into his own pocket for that, because he realized this was the highest form of stucco which overrode all the lower forms of stucco which he may have been no longer been able to cope with, and therefore he gave her the parnosa. And as a result, that's why the Gemara says that the Malachim complained to God, well, look, you've got a man here, a tzaddik, who's given parnosa to the woman. He's not just giving it stocker and an ordinary stocker tatsim bebovas. This is much more than that. This is of a hechazaktaba. This is of highest level of stocker. He deserves more attention. So, why 22 years? Here is where the Chofetz Chaim comes in with a brilliant answer. He says, the parasha of stocker, as everybody knows, is in Re'eh. Which is why we say it on Shemini Atzeres, we say Aser to Aser, and all the inyan of Stocker Pasek, Tiftak Pasek, all that is in Parshas Re, all the inyan of Stocker. The Parsha of Herzakta Bo is in a completely different place in Chumash. The Parsha of Herzakta Bo is in Bahar. And there, it's not talking about Stocker, it's just talking about helping other people, Herzakta Bo. If you count the number of words that there are in the Parsha, in the Bahar of Herzakta Bo, there are exactly 22 words. And therefore every word in that Parsha came in order to give him one extra year. That's what the Chofetz Chaim says. Because if it had been ordinary stocko, it should have been a gematria based on the number of words in the A. But no, the point was, it was the Parsha of Herzakta Bo which was so impressed with his behavior that they came and they gave him the 22 years. So those are the five explanations of the Gemara. We could learn all sorts of interesting things from it. But the last one is the most important, because that teaches us something about the priorities in stocker. We can see, we talked before about priorities in stocker. For example, a poor person and a person who needs fertility treatment, and all sorts of other stockers. I'm not going into the situation, of course you've got to look after your own family first, and the others. There's all sorts of other halachas in tzedakah. There's a beautiful story told about the vision of Tzedaba, not the vision of Tzedaba, another Rebbe. I'm mixing two stories up. It happened like this. This Rebbe was very upset that there was a man in his community who really needed tzedakah badly. And his brother was a very wealthy person. He gave all sorts of stock to other people, but he never gave to his own brother. He felt either, look, my brother, he can make parnosa. If I can make my brother, so my brother can make parnosa. I don't want to embarrass my brother. He just ignored his brother. So one day the Rebbe called in the man and said, I need a stock for a very wichtige zweck, a very important cause. So I said, the Rebbe says it's very important. Here's an open check. How much would you like me to write, Rebbe? So you write what you'd normally give to a really choshev oni. It was £2,000, whatever the figure was. So a man writes £2,000 on the check, and he leaves the name blank. So the Rebbe says, now I'd like you to fill the name in, please. So he didn't tell me who the name was. I'm telling you now, the name is Yankel Smith. So the man says to him, hang on a second, my name is Yosef Smith. This brother, this is my brother. I've got a brother called Yankel Smith. This is very funny. You know, it's very a coincidence. Yeah. This is your brother. You write that down. What? But the message he got through to him is that Yankel Smith, his own brother, is just as important and more important than some strange person out there. People often overlook their own family. The family has to come first, as we learn in Mishpatim, in Keset Tavah, it's only Imoch, you've got to deal with your own family first. Now, so there are all sorts of other halachas regarding priority, but quite clearly the mitzvah of Herzakta Bo, if everything else is equal, is clearly a superior mitzvah. Now I want to tell you a maisa shahoy with me which happened as follows. One day some people came along collecting for somebody who had gone bankrupt. They came to me collecting for somebody who was bankrupt from Eretz Yisrael, from Yerushalayim. So I said, they showed me a ksav hamlotza. I read the Ksav Hamlotza, and it said in it from the Bestin of the Eder Haredis, a letter stating, and it looked as though it was halachically written, it wasn't just guzmos, as often does happen, though, pidgin, shuyim, pikuach nefesh. This was written in a sort of halachic tone, that this is the biggest mitzvah that you can have because it's the mitzvah of herkzaktabo, which is higher than any other mitzvah. I turned around to these people and said, Zot me moichel zayin, but this is not the biggest mitzvah. The mitzvah you've given me here, this is not herkzaktabo. They looked at me, what, you're trying to get out of giving stock? I said, I'm not trying to get out of giving stock. You wouldn't have come to me if I wasn't going to give you a stocker. I give stocker, but I don't like being conned into giving stocker for something which is not as it should be. I don't believe this is the highest priority. I will give you stocker, but I don't like to be told that this is the highest priority when it isn't. Why not? Because I said, the man's already bankrupt. If he's already bankrupt, where's the Verzaktobo come into it? And Rashi says quite clearly that the mitzvah zaktabo is where you have a person who's struggling with his donkey, you help him to keep the load on the donkey before it falls off. Because once it's fallen off, it's so much more difficult to put it back on again. So I said, if you came to me that the man was in financial difficulties and his business was about to go bust and you want me to assist him, that's zaktabo. But if it's already gone bust, where's the Verzaktabo in that? So they weren't very happy. They got their stocker, but what then subsequently happened, I decided, listen, the best of the Eder Haredis writes such a halacha, it needs investigating. So I made a whole investigation of this particular subject. It seems to me pretty clear from Rashi and Chumash, it only applies to a person who is not yet down. Because the whole point is, if he you want to save him from going bust. If he's already gone bust, he's already in Mavuyish, it's much more difficult to set up a new business. And there are a lot of proofs to this, so I haven't got a lot of time left, but very briefly, Rav Hirsch in Chumash explains that the Pasuk talks about Motor Yad, not Motor Regel. Normally it says Motor Ragli. I've collapsed, as we say in Yeshushleim Yom Revi. Imomati Motor Ragli. Motor Ragli is when you've gone down completely, you've just collapsed. Motor yad means you haven't yet completely gone. It's your hand has gone, means you need support to keep going. So he's also saying the same as Rashi. Rashi is saying it's not motor regel, it's motor yad. If it's motor yad, that means it's still a chance of saving the person. And the Rambam, if you look carefully at the Losh of the Rambam says that the Mala Gedoyla Shein Le Mala Memeno Ze Machzik Biyad Yisrael Shem Moch Venosin Le Matzona O Halvo, you give the person support, O Osem O Shutfus, a partnership, or you find work for him to do. That is, you Koloma, it goes on to say, the Pasuk is Verzakto Bo, Koloma Hachazek Bo Ad Shelo Yipol Vietzdarech. Look after him before he collapses, not afterwards. On the other hand, the question is, according to this thesis, what about this Gemara? This woman had already collapsed. She said, Parnasani. Well, the first answer could be that she hadn't really collapsed yet. She was about to go. She has a business, and she has no finance left. The banks are all coming. Give me that little bit extra help, and I'll be able to continue. That would be the simple chat in the Gemara. I'm not asking for food for survival. I'm asking for Parnasani. That would be the simple chat. But it could also be, there could be a difference. It's possible to argue that there's a situation where a person wants to set up a business that could possibly be part of their Zaktobo. I can understand that they could possibly have had a wider explanation of exactly, although a person's gone bankrupt, you normally assume he's gone out of business, but it could be, don't look at the actual fact that that particular business is gone, you look at the man, whether the man is capable of continuing in business. If the man is no longer capable of continuing in any business, then clearly he's a bankrupt and that's ordinary stocker. But if the man is capable of doing a business, even if the previous business went bankrupt, I suppose it's still possibly arguable that that man has the koichus and the power of continuing a business, and perhaps one could stretch to say that's also included. This needed quite a lot of further depth to discuss it. Now, one friend of mine in London heard about this discussion that I was conducting, and he quoted from a Sephorno. The Sephorno translates Verzaktabo It just says Lahakimo. Lahakimo. Now, you could learn Lahakim means that somebody who's already down, you raise him up from completely being down. That's what the Hifl means. Lahakim, to bring up. Because if it means to keep him going, it should have said Lekaimo. Lekaim means to keep somebody who's already okay and just keep him going. Lahakim means to start afresh. So he suggested that perhaps that Sephorna would forehold like the Edar Haredis, that even if he's down completely, there is still an inion of Lahakimo. But it's very difficult to decide a whole halacha from one little word in the Sephorna, which is after all Perush, if that's a Keneged or the Gedolim. Now, if you look carefully at the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, they all explain that the reason why this is the highest Madrega of Tzedakah is Mipnei She'ein Ha'oni Misbayesh Klal. The Oni is not in any way Mavuyish. She'eri Eino Notel Mamon Mishum Adam. He's not taking from anybody. He's borrowing. He'll pay back. He's doing a partnership. Therefore, the Oni doesn't feel lowered in his dignity because he has people who are helping him. That's normal for friends to help out. That is not Mavayish a person. I'll help you today, you lend me some eggs today, I'll lend you some tomatoes tomorrow. That's normal behaviour, that's not in any way a busha. However, once he's already clearly collapsed, his business is gone and been sold, and then he comes to ask for it, then it becomes a very different situation. So, this discussion went backwards and forwards, and the conclusion that I came to was like Rashi, that if a person is already bankrupt, then it's ordinary tzedakah. However, as I said to you before, the Eidah Haredis seem to be under the impression, that's what it seemed from their letter, that this person who was already a bankrupt was still a performer of exactibo because you could get him back on his feet. Now, the Chofetz Chaim, who is talking about this particular subject in relation to this Gemara, writes as follows. He says, Da, to be a Radeus Simon Reish Mem Tes, it says, if a person gives a matona lemismoitate, ubezehu machazik God, if you give to somebody who's dropping and falling, and then you keep him going, this is part of this mitzvah. Therefore, one should be very careful if somebody has a situation where his behemoth has died, and he used his behemoth. Or take a modern situation, a person is a taxi driver and he makes a good parnosa, and his taxi conks out. That happened very recently. Somebody hadn't got any, he needed help to buy a new taxi, otherwise he couldn't do his parnosa. So you lend him the money or you buy him a new taxi, that is a hexactor bill because you enable him to do his business, because without that he wouldn't be able to do it. Or for example, an almona who's just lost her husband and she doesn't know how to look after the business, you help her in the business, you give her some help, work to do, that is part of the mitzvah. And that is like Binyamin HaTzadik, which we've just learned here, it's exactly that situation. So it would seem that the Chofetz Chaim is actually more akin to the Eidah Haredis' view than to the Rashi view. So this was a part of the discussion, but I've said afterwards, I wrote, perhaps one can make a distinction in the situation of the Chofetz Chaim, which is talking about a person who is mismotivated. He says clearly, he hasn't gone yet, he's only stumbling. He had a temporary setback, like Binyamin HaTzadik, who was a time of Batsoris. Therefore, it was a when the drought would be over, she'd get back to normal again. She hasn't gone, her business has not gone fucked. She hasn't gone completely bankrupt. Mashenkin, in our situation, the man's business has gone bankrupt, has been sold, he's got nothing left. He's already reached Dikaon, the Chosek Ho. So you can't remove the busher by giving him money. He's already a bankrupt. He's got the name of a bankrupt. And the Rambam also said, Lahachzikar ad Shaloyipo. Well, according to the Chofetz Chaim, if you're going to learn that he has a complete nefilah, then that doesn't fit in with the language of the Rambam. He's already poshered Esharego, and that's Maisim B'chol Yom Golil HaKol. So, this is all part of the discussion. That somebody wanted to say that perhaps the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. It's well known that the Ramban does not hold that the Hechzak Tavo is a form of tztaka of the eight forms of tztaka. He learns different pshat and pasuk in Baha. Although the Rambam learns that from the pasuk the exacto means a form of tztaka, the Rambam disagrees. He says he's not talking about that. It's talking about a ger toshav, a different situation. You've got to look after the ger toshav. It's not talking about the gedorim in tztaka, and therefore he disagrees with the Rambam on the question of whether this is a form of tztaka. And therefore they said it could be that they follow the Ramban and not this shitta. First of all, if you've got the Rambam, the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch on one side, that outweighs the Ramban, because although Ramban is a tremendous poisek, tremendous godel, it's not a poisek for us like the Ramban and the Shulchan Aruch, which is what we follow. But more than that, it's true that the Ramban disagrees with pshat in the pasuk with the Ramban, and this is not a form of tztaka. But who says he disagrees with the concept? Maybe the Ramban agrees entirely with the concept of the Ramban. He says this is the highest form of helping another person, a tremendous thing. Maybe it's even higher than tztaka. It's not one of the eight gidrei tztaka, that's true, because you haven't got a pasuk in the Torah to tell us that it's tztaka. I'm not, I disagree with the Rambam, says the Rambam, but I still agree with the Rambam that this form of help is the highest form of help. Horai, that we've got a mechilta, which Rashi quotes. The Rambam's not going to argue with that. So even though he might say the pasuk is coming for a different mitzvah of gei toshav and not for the mitzvah of hezakta, but it doesn't mean to say he disagrees with the Rambam. And therefore the logical situation is the Ramban also agrees with the Ramban on this. So what's the practical position for us? The practical nafkamina is, if you've got two Eniyim come forward, one is bankrupt already and is destitute, and another one comes forward and needs help so his business should continue, which one do you choose? Now, logic might tell you, look, this guy who's gone bankrupt, has got nothing to eat, he's starving. If it's a question of pikuach nefesh, that's a different situation. As I said before, every situation has got to be looked with all the different ramifications. If he's your brother, it's a different situation. I'm not discussing that. If all the other effects are equal, and you're giving out tztaka, and you've got £100 to give, should you give £50 to this one and £50 to that one? Should you give £10 to this one and £90 to that one? Or should you give it all to that one? Now, these are difficult shilas which we have as givers, day in and day out. I have to decide, do you give to a Torah Moshed? Kol Elyon HaTalmud comes to ask for a donation. Kol Gateshead comes to ask for a donation. Lanyado Hospital comes to ask for a donation. How do you decide it? What determine it? There are halachas, definite halachas to deal with this. My father, Zichron Levroch, had a beautiful club. He said, of course you've got to give a little bit to everything. That's definite. You must give something to everything if you're capable of it. However, in choosing something, it is mentioned you give to what's dear in your heart. That's well known, and therefore many people give to something which is dear. You also give to where you've got an obligation, where your children go to moshes, where you have a hakor satov, or if you've got a relation who's working there. All these are gedorim in how what to give. But he said, where all those gedorim don't apply, he says, look for the mes mitzvah. A mes mitzvah is the biggest mitzvah of all mitzvahs. What's a mes mitzvah? A mes mitzvah is those things where other people are not going to give to it, and you know it's important to give to it. What are those mitzvahs? That's the mitzvah where the satan is greatest. The mitzvah where the satan tells you don't give. Now, the satan's not going to tell you not to give to a hospital. It's not going to tell you not to give to a poor person. But do you know where the satan's going to tell you not to give? Don't give to a cola, those lazy bums sitting on their backside doing nothing. That's what. Let them go out and work. Why should they be kept? That's what the satan tells you day in, day out. That's the situation, which is a mess mitzvah. That's the hardest thing to collect for, is a kol somewhere. And that's why my father said, you give to yeshivas and kolim, because that's the mess mitzvah of Yiddishkeit. The Torah is that. The reason why it's the mes mitzvah is because the Torah is the greatest thing, and the Satan wants to stop Torah at all causes, in all ways. He's not so bothered about stopping hospitals. Yeah, he'll try that too. But the main thing he wants to stop is Torah, because we know Torah is the Sam Keneged Sam Amovis. It says, if you want to beat the Satan, it says in the Gemara tradition, take him to the Beis HaMedrash. Moshkei in the Beis HaMedrash. Go to the Beis HaMedrash. There you'll be able to overcome the Satan. That's what my father's cry was. If you've got everything else is equal, the Kohelim have got to be given priority. That was a cloud which I was makabel from my father's Zichron Levracha, Alpi logic. But here we're talking of a particular situation of two poor people, one who's bust and bankrupt and needs help, and another person needs help to so his business should keep going. According to my assessment of the situation, based on how we've learned in the Gemara here, there's no contest. The Hechzak Dobro is first. You must give to the person whom you can keep him going. You might think that's peculiar, because you're not giving stock, you're giving a loan, you're giving help, you're paying a bit more for a haircut. No, that is a bigger mitzvah, according to this analysis, than is the mitzvah of plain stocker. However, according to the Eda Charedis' approach, one could argue differently. One could argue, no, there's no difference between the two, because they're both a form of help, and therefore you could choose which one you go. You could say, you know, you're entitled to choose the person who's, with whom you're friendlier, the fellow you, whom you've got a better yididus with. Or you could turn around and say even more than that. According to them, it might be a bigger mitzvah to give to this guy who is completely bankrupt because he's got nothing in his house than this guy who might be able to make do somehow or other. That would be according to their analysis. But as I've said, I do believe that having looked thoroughly into the subject, I'm not going to have a fight with the Dayan, with the Eda Charedis. It could be, though, that when they wrote their letter, they weren't careful enough about their language. They were trying to impress upon people, and maybe that if they looked at it carefully, if it came to a proper din Torah, they would agree with the other view, which is that Hechzak Dobro is the highest form of stocker, and therefore, by definition, if it's a higher form of stocker, it clearly has a priority. Now, all that is all part of this agoda which we've been learning here from Binyamin HaTzadik, and according to that, it all fits in like a glove. All the different problems which we've saw in the agoda, which tend to be just brushed aside it's just the language. No, every word in Gemara, just like in Chumash, that is there for a purpose. It's meduyik, and is giving a message of some sort. Clearly, Agadot is much harder to get the message out, because it's couched in very often in Ramazim, and very often, as I said, numbers represent things, and animals represent things, and all sorts of different things which happen represent other things. This is the nature of Agadot, and that's why a person has to be a boki in Agadot in order to understand the details and the nuances of what's going on. But to finish off with, it seems fairly clear that this 22 years, all these different pshatim, show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives everybody back midah keneged midah, and every good deed you do is carefully weighed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay every form of tzedakah in full.